People don't make you angry. People don't hurt you. People aren't responsible for your happiness. You are responding, you're being reactive, and how can you pay attention to that process and notice where you can shift and make changes? And that's how we make change.
Hello, my name is Wing, and welcome to A Work in Purpose, the podcast for you to hear inspiring stories of how people have found their purpose in life and insights and tips on how you can find yours too. Finally, we're back with a new episode. I needed to take a little break from this podcast for personal reasons. Well, actually, I recently went through a conscious uncoupling with my partner of 4 years, which was quite a life transition. I had to pack and move out of the old place we've been living in together for the last 2 years during the pandemic, and I moved into a new place. In fact, with my ex-spouse of 13 years, with whom we're still in the process of getting a divorce. And everything is all settled now and great. You might be thinking, huh? You've moved in with someone you're divorcing? How is that possible? Yes, I know it's mind-boggling and there's a lot to unpack. Which is why I'm very excited for our next guest, Sheva Gans, who is a therapist who specializes in people going through divorces and single parenting. It was after going through her own divorce that she had found her purpose in life. Now she's using her background and specialty in expressive art therapy to help people going through major life changes, like a divorce, to reclaim control of their life and thrive. Listen to this fascinating episode to hear Sheva's advice on how people can change their victimhood story and how to identify and leverage the ideal identity of ourselves to live out our best selves and purposes. Also, if you're interested in practical tools and techniques we can all use to better understand why we feel the way we do and use this insight to improve the way we live, Sheva has a wealth of knowledge to share as well. This episode really resonated with me, and I hope it will with you too. So let's get started. Hello, welcome to A Work in Purpose podcast, Sheva. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. So I want to ask you first. So you are an expressive art therapist, and you focus on single parents and people going through a divorce. Can you share a bit briefly why you decided to focus on that in particular?
For a couple of reasons. I guess the biggest one is that it's something that I personally went through myself. I'm a divorced woman, a single mom to 3 kids. And I think it was really important for me to do work that I felt authentic to, that I could speak to the experience, that I've tried the things that I recommend. And, you know, obviously not everything that worked for me is going to work for other people, but at least I felt real in it rather than focus and have a niche or a specialty that I had absolutely no experience or relationship to. It just felt more real to focus on something that I experienced.
Okay. So you use expressive art. You teach your clients to use art to go through transformative changes, right? Can you tell us more about how that works?
For sure. So my degree is in expressive arts, which is this kind of plural, all-encompassing modality, rather than focus on just art or drama or writing or movement or dance or music. It's kind of this all-encompassing approach to recognize that the process of creation can access a deeper part of ourselves. And I don't always use expressive arts in sessions, but I like having the option. And the way that I explain it is that when we talk, we usually filter through our many systems of cognitive bias. And we don't always even know what we want to say. How often are you asked, oh, well, how do you feel? Or how do you feel about this? And you're not really sure. You just know that you're uncomfortable or in pain. And it's just not sitting right with you. But it's hard to find the right words for that experience. When you start creating and you do art or movement or any of that creative stuff, you're kind of bypassing that part of your brain and you're going to more that emotional place. And that creation process just brings to the surface things that wouldn't necessarily be brought up on their own. And then you look back and what I love about it is that there's no right or wrong. It's not art to make it look good or dance that has to look a certain way. It's just, wow, why did I do that? Why did I put things there? Or, you know, what does it mean to me? And it's the meaning that we all personally draw from the experience. And I find that to be really, really helpful, especially in this population with transition. Divorce is all about transition to a new stage in your life and letting go of the past and moving towards the future, that using these kinds of tools can be really helpful.
Nice. So how exactly does it work? Let's say, what's a typical consultation like? Let's say I come in for a session and I'm recently divorced. What would you say or have me do?
Well, everything's changed now online, right? So in my office, in the old, I call it olden times, when back in the olden times, when I had an office space and I had all my toys, I just part of something that I believe in is called reparenting ourselves. And I can talk more, a little bit more about that afterwards. And one of the things that's part of that is getting more in touch with the playful side of ourselves that as adults, we think is not important and we think we don't have time for that. And, you know, that's just silly. But I think that play or curious investigation is a really important part. And we can play around with that. So in the office, I had more tools. Now online, I've had to be the one to play around with it and figure out how to do it. For the most part, it's a lot of talking. There is a lot of talking. And then I'll hear what the themes are, what people kind of get trapped in. And then I'll try and think of a good exercise that might help. You know, it might be a journal prompt. It might be, I play around with Jamboard. Are you familiar with Jamboard?
No, what's that?
So it's this, like, I think Google put it out and it's really simple. And I really hope that they develop it so it has more features, but it's a way for two people to interact together while they're online. So I'll do that. And we'll use Jamboard to bring some of the visual arts. So it's kind of more digital visual arts. And then we play around with it. There's no prescribed form. It's a lot of, oh, let's see what comes up and let's see what happens.
And for someone who recently goes through a divorce, what usually comes up in these sort of sessions that they kind of discover?
Oh, I mean, so different and also so dependent on where people are in that process. But for the most part, there's a lot of anger. People are angry. People are angry at themselves. They should have done better. People are angry at their partner. Maybe they were cheated on. Maybe they were left. Maybe they weren't attended to. There's just a lot of angry at the community that didn't support them enough, angry at just people. There's a lot of anger that needs to be moved.
And through art, they can release it in a healthier way? Is that the purpose of it? Or just to have it out in the open to explore?
I wouldn't say healthier. There's just so many different approaches to therapy and healing that are effective and good. It's just a way that some people really relate to. I don't know if you've ever heard the term, emotion is energy in motion, right? Mm. So we need to feel our emotions. They're important, and we do not have good or bad emotions. Emotions just let us know what's going on and what we can do. And so the process of creating, so if you were to draw something or play song or move in a certain way, you're moving that energy. And that's really helpful in recognizing the emotion, but also letting it go after you've listened to the message instead of sitting in it. Sitting in anger, sitting in resentment, in sadness. That's not good.
Yeah. So what happens in the next stage after someone expresses and feels the emotion, then what should they do next to kind of move on and maybe even thrive after going through such an experience like a divorce?
It's not a linear step-by-step process, but the goal is to start to be more aware. Pay attention. You know, most of us function on autopilot. We don't really realize what's going on inside. We don't realize what we're thinking, what we're actually feeling, what we actually want, what's actually happening inside. And this kind of work for me is all about taking a step back and paying attention. So, and what I love about that approach is that it helps you take responsibility for your life. People don't make you angry. People don't hurt you. People aren't responsible for your happiness. You are responding, you're being reactive, and how can you pay attention to that process and notice where you can shift and make changes? And that's how we make change. The slight, like I like to say, are stretching out the cycle. So when you stretch it out, where can you insert a pause and redirect and then just get out of patterns? Because what happens very often is that people who don't pay attention get back into the same type of relationship pattern. You know, you'll see people who are just keep going from one to the next and it's exactly the same because we're stuck in a pattern and it's hard to get out of it. And so when you start to pay attention and be aware, you can shift and move away from that pattern and make different choices that maybe might make you happier.
So would you say your role is kind of to help people see other options or other choices they can make, or is that really up to them to decide and figure out?
Exactly. I love how you phrase that. Yes, I obviously can't make their choices or even let them know what their choices are. But my role is to be that guide to help a person see that they're able to do that, that you are able to reflect, take a step and look inwards so that you can see what the choices that you have are.
Yeah. So what does it look like when you see, you have a client who went in not knowing that they have all these choices, and then after going through this process, they realize, oh my gosh, I have so much more power and control over my destiny. What is that like from your perspective to observe?
Oh, for me, it's very rewarding to observe that when you see somebody take ownership of their life, and there's a freedom and a release and a relief that happens. And it's a privilege for me to be a part of that. I do feel very privileged to anyone who does any type of therapeutic or healing work, to see somebody's personal private pain is rare. You know, like once again, in olden times when we used to see people, we would pass people on the street and interact with people all the time, but we rarely know what's actually going on for a person inside. For me to be a part of that, first of all, it helps me so much with my empathy towards other people. And when I interact with people and maybe I would be triggered or get upset, it's helpful for me to remember, I don't know what's going on in that person's life. You know, we have no idea what really is going on below the surface, and just being a little bit more forgiving and forgiving to myself as well. So it's a privilege, and it's really wonderful to see.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I'm curious to hear what you think. So why is it that it's so common for many people to feel so disempowered and not knowing that they have these options and choices that they can take themselves? What is it about our culture, society, or just our way of thinking that encourages that sort of mindset?
That's a really good question. And I don't know if I know exactly why we've grown accustomed to this. And I don't know really what it's like in other cultures. And I would actually say it's probably different in other cultures. But in our culture, there is an expectation that other people are going to meet our needs. And we grow up kind of dependent on that people will meet our needs for us. And there is a healthy dynamic of a relationship where two people do help each other meet their own needs. But when somebody isn't aware of what their needs are and doesn't know how to meet their needs by themselves, that's when these unhealthy dynamics come and it's very hard to find happiness when we're just waiting for our needs to get met and we don't know how to express it and we don't know how to ask for it. And the people that we're with or around us, they don't know how to do that. Nobody's a mind reader. They don't know how to do it either. And I think we're just raised in that way for some reason.
Interesting. So it sounds like part of the problem is that many of us don't know ourselves, who we are really. And until we know ourselves, then we can't expect the world to, you know, fit in and make us happy, right?
Yeah. And I think that's two parts. I think we actually do have pretty common shared basic needs that we're not so aware of. And then we also have the things that make us unique that we specifically need because we are who we are. And getting that deeper awareness of what's actually going on underneath the surface will be so helpful in being happy and letting go.
Yeah. And like, I think this ties in so closely to discovering one's life's purpose or purposes, because I've often said that until you know yourself, you can't know your purpose really. So based on your experience as an expressive art therapist, what can people do to truly discover and learn who they really are?
So I'm going to talk about the four F's.
Yes.
Talk about it, but your question reminded me of this thing that I call the effort system. So it's four F's.
Okay.
And it actually relates to our basic needs. And I think if we can tap into these four things, you can really find a very strong sense of self. So the first F is failure, not being afraid to fail. Our society has for some reason told us that failure is bad. And then we do everything that we can to avoid failing, but failing is part of a process that helps us learn what we're good at and what we're not good at. And that is very hugely related to finding your purpose. Is What makes you feel good? What are you good at? We should do the things that we're good at. And part of learning what we're good at is failing. And it's natural and it's okay to fail. So when we embrace failure, we start to weed out the things that we're not great at, because not very rare, few of us are amazing at everything. So embrace failure. Try to do things that put you out of your comfort zone. And it's okay if you fail. And then you'll start to realize where your strengths are. And that is a big part of finding your purpose, is coming at it from your strengths. What are you good at? What do you enjoy doing? The next F is forgiveness, of looking in yourself, what you can forgive for yourself. You know, our inner dialogue, your self-critic is so strong. Sometimes I challenge people to verbalize out loud the voice inside their heads, and we would never talk to other people the way we talk to ourselves. So being a little bit more self-compassionate to yourself, and at the same time, looking at what grievances you're holding on to with other people. We get really, really, really stuck when we sit in a place of anger. So where can you kind of let go and forgive and open up more places for connection in your life? Like, who do you want to connect to? And what's holding you back from connection is a good place to start from. The third F is fear. We are so scared of so many things. And once we take ownership and responsibility and just embrace fear, we can learn to take more risks and step out of our comfort zone. And the last one is fun. How to have more fun. This is what brings you joy. Look for the things that just are exciting and fun and playful, and the things that you're curious about. And it is okay to have fun. It didn't have to stop when you were a kid. I don't know where in our growth into adulthood, we decided that fun belonged in childhood, because it doesn't. So I think that those four steps is a great way to tap into what your purpose is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting you said that. Seems like for each one of those, our society kind of like, it's not ideal for each of those Fs. Like, we're not encouraged to embrace fear, and we're taught to be kind of fearful of other people, you know. And what was the third one again?
So failure, forgiveness, fear, yes. and fun. And you're right. And even forgiveness, it's like, think of our society where everything revolves around lawsuits, and like, we're a very litigious society where we just want revenge and we want people to suffer for what they, not that there aren't warranted lawsuits, but it's kind of the mindset that we are in of people need to suffer for the way that they've hurt me. And if you can see where you can let go of some of that, I think it would be very freeing. Not you, mm-hmm. but generally.
Yeah. So in the back of your mind, I guess, when you do your work, do you typically address those four Fs and help people to kind of overcome like fear and failure, embracing fun and forgiveness?
Yeah, it's not always packaged in that cute way. That's kind of a way that I came up with when I give talks and things like that and want to get to the point straight away. But I definitely address all of that in some way at some point along the way with the work that I do with individuals. And I think that even just the creative part is fun. And that's, a lot of people don't have that in their lives so much. So using the creative arts is one way to tap into having more fun and excitement in our lives.
What do you think of this? How maybe certain people, they cling on to these things like not being forgiving, because they built like an identity off of these negative Fs, let's say, and then they don't want to change because that's how they see themselves out and how other people see them. And then if they dissolve that, they'll be, then who are they then, essentially? Do you come across that as like that sort of like clinging on to like a past identity that is no longer healthy?
For sure. And those are just great questions then. Who are you without your anger, without your fear, with failure? And that's a great starting point to have a discussion of what comes up for you when you think about letting that go and you have resistance to that, and what are your reactions and why? And yeah, just great, great exploration there. I don't have an answer, but definitely it comes up.
Yeah. What would be some like good things for people to do to explore more about who they potentially are? What are some practical advice or tips, actions they can take?
I would say to push yourself out of comfort zone a little bit. Do something different. try and do something maybe a little bit different every day than you normally do it. Try new things, try new hobbies, expand who you are, see what new experiences you can bring into your life. I mean, everything is so tainted right now with COVID and the restrictions that we have, but you know, I think the world will hopefully be opening up more. And how can you connect more with other people? How can you reach out and try something new, go to a museum, go play a sport you haven't played, go to the gym, try a new food, just experience life in a way of curiosity and see what feels good. Like we want to feel good and we want to do things that make us feel good. So have a little bit of exploration with that. Mm. Also journaling. Yeah. I would say that journaling is a great way to start if you're stuck at home. And just there's this thing called like creative writing or free flow writing of just putting pen to paper and just letting it come, whatever comes up, and spending a few minutes daily in this free flow writing will really bring stuff to the surface and will give you a lot of clarity on what's going on.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been doing that since high school, and I think I would have been completely different. I haven't been doing that on a regular basis. So
have you been doing that daily, quite often?
I fell off it for many years after college, but then I went back and did it pretty often for the last 2 years, I would say.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And every time I stop doing it during my years after college, and when I do it, I'm like, oh, why did I ever stop? It feels so good. And I'm like reconnecting to my inner self. And because you kind of feel lost and directionless at times when you're not well connected to your inner wisdom, right?
Yes. And not to be too cliche, but I really do recommend a meditation practice. Like that is one of the best ways to start to pay attention to what's going on inside. And even starting small, I know when people hear meditation, they get a little nervous. I don't have 20, 30 minutes a day. I don't have an hour. And just starting with 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you can do, just it is the way I describe it. The brain isn't actually a muscle, but it's similar to a muscle. If you wanted to get toned, you would go to a gym and you would work out and you would see the results. And that's the same thing with this kind of work. If you really want to know yourself, you have to be able to listen to what's going on inside. And meditation is the gym part of it. It's just the training.
Yeah, it is. From all the interviews I've been doing, it sounds like everyone who have found the purpose did so after they started meditating for a little while. And then it's like, oh yeah, there's something there. There's a connection.
And that's what's powerful about what you're doing is that you get to see what are the common denominators. You know, I'm sure everybody has their own system and what they use to get to where they are, but what's common is really where the gold is at. And that's cool that that's what you're discovering, that meditation is just such a foundational part of getting to know yourself and what you want. And I believe that.
Yeah, because you're not like having your mind control you when actually your mind is just noise that's just doing its own thing randomly. So it's good to know how to train it.
Yeah.
So what about with art? Is there anything that we can do with art that can help us find ourselves?
I mean, there's a lot of different practices, but doodling just really, it's similar to the free form writing, but instead of writing, just doodle. Put down, just grab a pen, grab a paper. If you happen to have other supplies in your house, crayons, markers, it is fun. I mean, when's the last time you picked up a crayon? It's just so childlike and it can be really relaxing. And then also if you want to investigate, you can kind of see, oh, what came up? What do I see in this picture? You know, what's meaningful to me from here? And that's a good way to explore with art in an easy way, right? Obviously, it can get more complicated with supplies and things like that. And collage is also a great way if people still have newspapers or magazines in their house. I would say collage is a really fun way to explore some stuff.
Mm. What should people make with the collage, like their vision for their future? What are some prompts that people can use that you recommend?
So there's actually a digital a website called freemix.com, which is a digital collage space, which I thought was so cool because very few of us have magazines anymore lying around and it's always so hard to find. It's also pretty simple. It's not that such a complicated site. And you can just make a collage about anything. A vision is great. You know, what do I want my year to look like? What does happiness look like to me? You can go in so many directions with collage. What does relationship look like? You know, people are struggling to find relationship and connection. asking yourself that question and then creating something, you kind of get to see this visual, which can give you a lot of answers.
Cool. Thank you. So earlier you mentioned something about reparenting. I'm curious to hear more about what that is now.
Well, I've been talking about reparenting, but subtly, that reparenting is recognizing that we all have needs and that those needs were most likely not fully met. Very few of our parents could fully meet our needs because they didn't have their needs fully met. It's kind of one of those things that just gets passed on generationally. And depending on what needs we did or didn't have met, that's kind of how we develop in life. And we develop coping skills based off of that, trying to get a need met. So for example, one of our needs is to feel important and to feel significant. And if a child didn't get that need met significantly, they might develop narcissistic tendencies, which is a very popular word. And especially in my field, everybody thinks they're divorcing a narcissist. Everybody thinks they've been in a relationship with a narcissist. Very few people are actually diagnosably narcissistic, but some people have a lot of those traits. And actually, it's not that they're evil or manipulative. It's that they don't know how to get that need met. And they're just doing it in a very unhealthy, destructive way. And that's just an example of recognizing a need that we have not met. And then kind of going back in and reparenting, of taking ownership of nobody has to meet these needs for me. I can do it myself. And getting those needs met on your own.
So yeah, essentially it's about feeling empowered about your own life and actions and choices, essentially, right?
Yeah, it's taking ownership and being a parent to yourself in that process and doing the best that you can. And I think it's a great way to, yes, you're right, take ownership.
So on a day-to-day basis, let's say I'm someone going through my day and there's this thought that came into my head and I'm reverting to my teenage self and thinking very, you know, selfishly. What can that person do to apply reparenting thinking to go in a different direction? Like, what are some triggers and habits that people can apply?
Well, that's a hard question to answer just based on what you told me, but it would be taking a step back, listening to the voice in your head. What exactly is that voice saying? What is an underlying belief that you have about yourself or the world? And what need are you trying to get met? Do you feel lonely? Do you feel unimportant? Do you feel unsafe? Do you feel bored? Those are really the four basic needs. So what can I, depending on what you tap into, what are you feeling in that moment? Now you can say, okay, how can I get this need met? Like I feel bored. So instead of doing reckless behavior, what can I do that's a little healthier? Can I go for a run? Can I call a friend? Can I pick up a book or listen to a podcast? Or I don't know, maybe go out and do something different, go get ice cream. So just instead of I'm going to grab a drink or I'm going to eat an unhealthy way, out of mindless reactivity, paying more attention to the underlying need and then making a healthier choice.
Would it be helpful to have like three options kind of like plan out for like, let's say the beginning of your month? Like if I feel bored, I'll look at these three options. So I won't revert to like the first compulsive thing that comes to mind. And would that be a good technique?
That's a great idea. And I can already see that you work in a very systematic way. You like to have it planned out and you like to have your answers ready, which is great that you know that about yourself. I think that that's great. But to get there, there needs to be a certain level of awareness of what your habits are and what your tendencies are so that you can pay attention to what you normally do and choose something else. But I think that that's wonderful to come up with options of if I'm feeling lonely, I can do A, B, C, D, you know, and if I'm feeling unimportant or ignored, I can do these things. And that's great to be, that's a cope ahead skill where you're planning for success instead of just relying on in the moment, which sometimes we fail in the moment when we're not prepared.
Yeah. Actually came across that from this journal that I got earlier this year of like, what do you tend to do when you're feeling this way? And what would you like to do instead? And then I wrote it down. I'm like, oh yeah, this is great. I can have this as a reference now.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just helpful to think it out in that way when we didn't realize that.
Yeah. So I want to ask a little bit about single parenting. I don't know how to form, but maybe there are some topics about single parenting you want to dive more into that you think I should ask.
The message that I would want to give people about single parenting is to really remember to put your child's needs at the forefront. And everything that I said before is really relevant to single parenting, especially the forgiveness part, because what's really traumatic for a child isn't necessarily a divorce. It's the conflict that they're continually exposed to. And if you get divorced and you just are just fighting and involving your kids in the middle and they're being pulled back and forth and asked to align and asked to take sides, that is so traumatizing for a child. And I really encourage single parents to the best of their ability. And I know that it's a two-way street and there's two parties involved, but I like to say it takes two to tango, it takes one to change the music. So can you change the music? Can you change the song? You know, how can you do that? How can you take responsibility and just keep your child out of the conflict?
Yeah. What's like the hard part of accomplishing that? People cling on to not forgiving and anger?
The hard part in single parenting is that you're still have a relationship with your co-parent. So for people who haven't changed, or if your co-parent hasn't changed and you keep experiencing the same thing over and over again, and it's so frustrating and you can't control them or change the behavior, it's hard. You know, like, it's easier to forgive somebody that you had a past issue with and you don't interact with them anymore, and you can kind of work through that because it's over and done and you can close that chapter. But with somebody that you're constantly interacting with and you keep coming and you keep butting heads and it's just so frustrating, that's hard. It's hard work, but it doesn't mean it's not important work. It's just hard work.
Is it harder because normally for you, maybe like the person you're seeing is seeing a professional, but the other person isn't, and then there's that disalignment, misalignment through that?
Yeah. That is hard, right? But that's reality. Mm-hmm. We have to also deal with the reality that we are in and the reality that we're given. And yeah, that's the part where you take responsibility. That's the part where you take ownership. That's the part where you show up as a good parent.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm very curious to hear more about your personal history and your background and how you got to where you are today. Would you mind sharing? Where would you like to start?
I won't bore you too much, but I got married young. I grew up in a religious home that encouraged me to get married young. In my early 20s, I had kids right away. I pretty much had three kids, married for 10 years. We moved around a little bit. We were just trying to find our happiness, and we were not able to do that. We ended up getting divorced. And after my divorce, I went back to school. I went back to graduate school. I got my degree in mental health counseling. And then when I finished, I sat down and I thought, okay, what direction do I want to go in? And the question that I asked myself, which I actually think is a good question to put on this podcast, is what is the intersection of what I'm good at, so my strengths, what I feel good doing, and what I think contributes to society or the world. And this is what I came up with. I just felt like this is where my passion was. This is what I thought I was good at. This is where I thought I could help people, of just working in mental health and in divorce and relationships and parenting. A lot of it also was, interestingly enough, is I felt that if I worked in the field of parenting and single parenting and, you know, developed myself into an expert, I would have to put my money where my mouth was. So in a way, I chose a profession that would make me accountable as a parent. You know, I can't come and talk to people and say, do this, try this, be this way, and then go home and be a negligent mom. And so it really makes me step up to the plate and show up in a way that's not always easy. And I'm far from perfect, and I have made and continue to make mistakes, but I like that this accountability that I've set up for myself. And that was actually somewhat intentional. And maybe that's also part of a thought process people can have. And how can your profession have a positive effect on who you are personally?
Yeah, that's good advice. Thank you. So where would you say you are at on your journey towards your purpose? Have you found it? Are you living it, working towards it?
I'm living it, but it's a living and breathing experience. You know, I'm still building things up. I'm still learning as I go along. I'm learning in this structure, what I like, what I don't like, what I'm good at, what I'm not good at, you know, and that's a process that I think will hopefully always continue as I develop in this field and in my practice. And I'm really just doing the best that I can and with a vision towards the future of just building on that. That's where I'm at.
Nice. And what would you say is your purpose currently?
Whew. In what realm, professionally or personally?
Maybe both or combined.
I think right now my focus is I want to show up as a present mom. That's really important focus for me right now. And before my kids like grow up and leave me and then just remember all the bad things, I need to get in as many good things as I can. And in my work, my purpose is really, like you said, very eloquently, just helping people realize that they have choice and teaching this concept of reparenting, because it's a very empowering approach, I find. And it's just taking responsibility and it's giving people the tools to navigate their own life in the way that they want to and choose to.
Nice. And so before, so you did you recently discover that this is your purpose, or did you, you mentioned how, as you were figuring out your, what you want to do with your career, at what point did you realize, oh yeah, I made the right decision. This is my purpose.
Good question. I actually always knew I wanted to be in a helping profession and using some type of creativity. When I was in high school, my dad, I don't even know where he got this from, but he was like, I just heard of this thing called music therapy. I think you'd be really good. That would be a really good option for you. And so I thought I wanted to be a music therapist, but you need to be really proficient in a musical instrument, which I wasn't. I can play, but I don't play very well. And so I did my undergraduate degree in art therapy. So I'm like, oh, okay, art's cool. I can do art. And then I did my master's in expressive arts, which expanded it. So I've really been on this track since high school where, and then I took some detours along the way. I got into education and I did some other trainings and things like that, but it kind of all propelled me here. And I think it's an ongoing process. I think it's really, like I said, it's just, I feel good. I'm happy. There are certain things that I do where I just feel ignited. I get excited. I'll give a talk or I'll have a session with somebody and I just feel yes. Like I really like finish it. I'm like, oh God, I love what I do. And that doesn't always happen. And that's okay. I don't think it's healthy to have that constant state of excitement. I think it's good that that happens once in a while where I check in and say, I'm on the right track. This feels good. I like what I'm doing. I enjoy it. And I'm involved in it.
So, that's amazing. Oh, wow. Yeah. So cool to hear. So you were always into the arts and helping people. Were there a time in your life, like before you maybe you started school to study this, when you weren't doing any of that stuff? And how did that feel living, you know, not living in your purpose to now? What's the difference like?
There was plenty of times in my life where I wasn't doing art. I rarely do art now, honestly. It's like I don't have time for it. But, and I wouldn't even call myself an artist. I just enjoy this exploration that can happen through art. I don't think this is my entire purpose. So I find my work to be very purposeful and this is my purpose in my work. Mm-hmm. But throughout different stages of my life, I've had different purposes. So there was a while when I wasn't working, I wasn't in school and I had young kids at home and that was my purpose. Or when I was first married and I was just getting to know myself and trying to navigate a young early stages of relationship. So there was purpose in that. And I don't know if I or if other people have only one purpose. I think it's what in the moment is giving you purpose and making you feel good and making life feel meaningful. Mm-hmm. And that I think constantly changes.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. So I'm very curious. So you decided to focus on divorcee and single parents. What are some things that you wish you had known when you were going through all that when you were younger?
When I was younger and married or when I was getting divorced?
By the time when you were getting divorced, I guess.
I mean, I had the incredible good fortune of meeting a woman who became my guide. I called her my guru. And I met her in the middle of my divorce and she really held my hand through the whole thing. And she just kept pushing, lead with love, not with conflict. Lead with love, not with conflict. And I needed to be babied by her. I would send her an email like, my ex sent me this and how should I respond? I just didn't know how to even approach life from that perspective of lead with love, not with hatred or conflict or war. And it really helped shift my ability to let go, to forgive, to move on, to take responsibility for my part. And it really stuck with me. And I felt thankful to have had that at that point in my life. And I think that's part of it. The giving back is trying to help other people just lead with love. Like, you know, I don't do that in every other area of my life. And it's not always easy, but it's been a very profound message for me. And I think it helped me, you know, my ex and I co-parent very well. We had a rough divorce and we have disagreements, but at the end of the day, we can be in the same room. We can have a conversation. We can be flexible. We can work with each other. And I think that that was part of it. And it wasn't all me. He was part of that as well. But I think that ability to lead with love changed everything. And actually recently, one of my children, and they're in their early teens now, they're older, commented and said that they were so thankful. One said to the other, you know, you don't know how good we have it. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And then he said, you know, we're just so thankful that you can have a good relationship with our father and that we're not involved in that conflict. And we see other people and our friends who just have a very hard time in their home lives. And it was a very rewarding moment. It paid off because it's not easy to leave with love when you just want to like send that text of like, you know, you want to let it all out and you're so angry. And then to get that feedback years later of it was worth it was great. And it was worth it. And if anybody is listening that is going through a divorce or a relationship breakup, and just know that the payoff at the end is so worth it to try and find a place of love in your heart.
Yeah, leading with love sounds so simple, but it's the most powerful thing anyone can do, really. It just changes everything. I totally agree. So I imagine in the beginning when she was telling you to do that, it was kind of like, oh, why would I want to leave with love?
I was frustrated. I was mad at her. Like, I'm the victim here. How dare you say that to me? And no, and he'll get away with it. And he'll walk all over me if I do this and I'm not standing up for myself. And I battled a lot of that. And I obviously need to make a special mention that there are cases of abuse that people do need to stand up for themselves and create boundaries and create distance and get away from that. But barring abuse, it's not about retaliation. Really, it isn't. It's about just protecting yourself. Do what you need to do to protect yourself and then let go of the rest. Let go.
Yeah.
Fine. And also something powerful that I experienced with this woman and in some of the healing work that we would do is that at the end of the day, he's my kid's dad and he's in them and I made them with him. And there is what to be thankful for, even if it stops there, even if nothing beyond that I can be thankful or grateful for, that's significant. So just to keep going back to that source of gratitude, even if your ex does such crazy and hurtful things, go back to the places where you can find gratitude. Mm-hmm. I found that helpful.
Yeah. So you touched upon something interesting. You mentioned the word victim. So it sounds like you have some sort of victim identity and victimhood story that you wanted to perpetuate for some end goal at the time. So how did you end up rewriting your story to move away from the victim of the story?
Ooh, good question. So I'm Jewish, and in Orthodox Judaism, the husband is the only one who grants the divorce. And he can give the divorce or not give the divorce. Like, and it's a spiritual divorce, not a legal divorce. And I was having a hard time getting my ex to give me my divorce. And that was the pain that I was in. And I felt very disempowered and very angry and very much a victim. And it went on for about 2 years. And I just wanted to close that door and move on. And she asked me a question, this woman, and right at the beginning of working with her. And she heard my story and I came in and I like to say, I played my violin and oh, such a victim and blah, 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 blah. And it felt true. And if you look at the facts, it was true. I was being victimized and and some people consider that emotional abuse of trapping a woman in a marriage. And she said to me, what are you doing to contribute to this? And I was floored and so angry. I'm like, how could you ask me a question like that? What? I'm doing nothing. I just want out of this marriage and nothing. It's all him. And I went home and I thought about it and I sat with it. And I cannot explain or excuse his behavior. I think that that action of withholding that divorce is wrong. At the end of the day, if I wanted to look at it at a more spiritual, energetic level, I think I was scared of divorce and I was scared to be single and I was worried about loving again or being loved and being rejected. And I do think on some energetic level, I was resistant to being vulnerable and open to rejection again. Whether or not you believe in energy or any of that, it was an incredibly freeing moment for me where I thought there is a part of this where I'm responsible. And that actually felt good. It felt like I have ownership of this part and he doesn't have ownership of all of it. And that was freeing. And I really found that to be just, oh, it was like this weight was lifted off my shoulders. And then I was able to relate to him in a different way. And then we were able to move past that to a place where, you know, he gave it to me, we closed that door, we healed and we moved past it. And I think stepping out of that victim role was part of that process.
Yeah, wow. Thank you for sharing that. So how were you able to relate to him differently after that shift? What changed?
Listen, it wasn't right away or easy, or I still have residual anger. There's still a part of me that's angry when I think about it because I was hurt. But I was able to have empathy for his position. I was able to understand more what he was doing and why he was doing it and why he felt it was okay or why he felt it was the only recourse that he had. And I mean, we weren't seeing eye to eye and I still don't agree with it, but it just allowed me to have compassion and let go of my anger.
I see. And then after this whole experience, at what point did you decide that I'm going to be a professional in this field and help others go through this? Was this some sort of like acceptance stage of like, or?
Same time, because at the time of my divorce, I was back in school. So I knew I was going to be a therapist. I wasn't sure that I would focus on this population. And then, like I said, after I graduated, and that's around the time that I ended up being fully divorced and moving on, that's kind of when it all came together. And I decided to make that my focus.
Got it. Cool. I want to ask you, what general advice would you give for people who are trying to figure out what their purpose is? And for those who kind of know what their purpose is, what advice would you give for them to truly step into it?
Okay. This is a great little exercise. If you're trying to figure out what your purpose is, or if you're trying to live in your purpose, it's helpful to isolate what your identity is. Who do you want to be? Who do you want to show up as? And so, for example, if one of my purposes is to be an amazing, awesome mom, so my identity is an amazing, awesome mom. And then I have to think, okay, what values does an amazing, awesome mom have? And to me, that's somebody who is listening, who's present, who's fun, who's loving and giving and all those kinds of things that I outline in my head. So I have this picture of what this mom looks like. And then I think, well, what behaviors does this kind of a mom do? And she puts away her phone when her kids come in and we have family dinners and she spends one-on-one times and she plans, you know, dates, one-on-one dates with her kids and those kinds of things. And now I have this picture of what my ideal self in this purposeful role looks like so that I can keep coming back to it. And something that I do when I write in the morning, either I journal or I have like my daily plan, is I write this question: what would my best self do in this moment? And having this picture of this ideal mom or this ideal therapist or this ideal friend or partner, when I'm in a moment that I'm stuck, I can check back in and think, okay, well, what are the values or behaviors of this ideal self? And what can I choose? What would I do? What would my best self do in this moment? And I truly think that, obviously I don't do that all the time and I'm not perfect and I'm not always living my best self. But I think if we all did something like that, imagine what a world and what interactions we would have where we all lived and interacted from our best self moments. It could be powerful.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to do that today and test it myself and encourage listeners to try that as well. So I know you have to go in a few minutes. So I'm going to want to go into the lightning round now. I'm going to ask you a bunch of short rapid fire questions. What is one thing you like to do to relax?
I like to read.
What is one thing you like to do for fun?
Dance.
What is one thing that makes you enthusiastic?
Oh, also dance. Do I need to do a different one?
Same one.
Learning. I love learning. I like listening to podcasts and I love that kind of stuff.
Great. What is one habit you always do for a great day?
Exercise.
And what is one habit you are working on or would like to have?
Breath work.
Yes, I love breath work. Any particular style?
Wim Hof.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. You should check
and
out.
I actually built an ice bath in my backyard and then I fell out of practice. So hard. You have to get up and you have to like will yourself to dunk into this freezing ice bath. But honestly, you cannot have a bad day when you start your day like that. Those days that I would do it, I would get up and I would dunk in the bath and I was only able to last 30 seconds because it was so cold. But there was no, like, I felt so invigorated and so alive that my day just, there was nowhere to go but up. Like, it just was the most amazing day. So I got to get back into that practice. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, I'm going to do that too. I don't have
ice. Cold shower. If you don't have access to a ice bath, then I would tell people start with a cold shower.
Yeah.
Also, what's cool about it is that forget about the actual like effects of the cold on your body. The act of pushing yourself to do something that you do not want to do and that is actually painful and uncomfortable sets yourself up for a day where you just know you can be successful. You just know you can do hard things and you've already pushed yourself beyond your comfort zone at 7:30 in the morning, let's say. And so that's the most amazing place to start your day from. So it's really has so many benefits. Now that I'm talking about it, I'm thinking I really need to start doing it again.
Cool. That's so exciting. What is the most important lesson you've ever learned? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Lead with love.
What's a book that changed your life?
The Four Agreements.
Great book. If you're not doing what you are doing today, what would you be doing instead?
I really like what I'm doing today. What I'm doing instead? I mean, I really do like to exercise. I mean, like a great day would be just this like body-oriented day of exercise, and massage, and sauna, and walking on the beach. But that's indulgent. I don't really think I want to do that every day. But that's a nice day off, self-care day.
Yeah, sounds great. And how would you describe your ideal life?
Ooh, my ideal life is to wake up each day excited about the day and have people in my life that I feel support me and that I can give to and that I feel given to. And yeah, that's my ideal life.
Nice. And how do you define purpose?
Purpose is the drive and the passion that get you excited about living life.
Great. And lastly, do you have any requests you would like our listeners to do?
A request. I guess lead with love of try and find a moment or an experience or a relationship that you're having a struggle with and see if you can lead with love a little bit. Can you tap into an area of gratitude? Can you let go of something that you're holding on to? I mean, I'm sure many of your listeners have heard the quote, being angry at somebody is like trying to poison them and swallowing the poison yourself, right? So it's true. Why hold on to that anger? So I would ask, my ask is, can you lead with love in one area of your life a little bit more?
Yeah. Oh, actually, I wanted to ask you earlier, when that lady told you to lead with love to your ex-husband, what exactly did that take the form of for people to understand how can I actually do that? What are some...
In that moment, and obviously it evolved and it was different over time, but in those moments, it was actually how like we were communicating via email. It's very back and forth. And we were in the middle of the divorce. So there was lawyers involved and court dates. And it was really in the emails of don't get defensive. Don't get aggressive. Don't attack. Just take a step back. Think about what I want. Think about what he wants. Think about the kids. And just not like even what... I think what's also so important is the words that we use hold a lot of weight. And we can say something and it can have such different meaning depending on the words that we use. So be mindful of the words that you use when you lead with love because it makes a difference. So just take a pause, think about what you're saying and think about what you want to say and make sure that they're aligned.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And where can people find you?
Easy to find. I'm on Instagram and I have a website, and both of those have my contact information. It's Sheva Gans. So Instagram is Sheva.Gans, Sheva Gan, like Nancy, Z, because I'm Canadian, or Z for Americans. And Shevagans.com is my website. And
great.
Plenty of information and resources on there.
Yeah, I'll leave them in the show notes if people want to check it out. Yeah, so thank you so much, Sheva, for being a part of a Work in Purpose podcast. That was such a great conversation. Thank you so much for being on.
Pleasure is mine. Great question. Now you got me thinking about all this stuff, all the things I need to do, get back into. But that was so great.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode with Sheva Gans and got inspired by her story and all her insights to ignite and reach your own purpose in life. If you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe, tell your friends about it, and rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Please also follow A Work in Purpose on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. May your present moment, now and forever, be filled with light, love, and joy. Until next time, this is Wing, and you are listening to A Work in Purpose.